What the census overlooked.
The last data point for crude marriage rates is 2008. That's almost 10 years ago, and it is a real loss for researchers, for cultural indicators. I think we have to start by asking for the correct data to be able to assess the cultural and social ramifications of marriage. It's not just a private institution. It extends into our economy and our culture and is most important for raising of children.
On the feature today, Cardiff Family's Andrea Borozik on the latest census numbers from Statistics Canada. In the news, the Supreme Court expands the list of interveners in the Trinity Western case, an update on funding for the so-called morning after pill, and ARPA's Bible Project is more than halfway to its funding goal.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
An unprecedented decision by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada on who will be allowed to intervene before the court in a high-profile case involving education. The issue centers on the Trinity Western case. The court has agreed to hear two conflicting appeals on whether the Langley-based Christian University should be allowed to open a law school. One of the justices on the court, Richard Wagner, had been put in charge of deciding which groups would be given intervener status in the case. On July 28th, Justice Wagner decided on allowing 9 interveners, including ARPA, to appear before the court. That decision prompted a firestorm of protest on social media, particularly from gay rights groups who claimed they were being denied a chance to be heard. So, a few days later, the Chief Justice issued an order varying Wagner's decision and allowing a total of 26 groups to intervene. ARPA lawyer John Sycamore says Wagner subsequently spoke to the Globe and Mail about the way that situation developed.
He said when he was made aware of concerns on social media that he actually sought out Chief Justice McLaughlin to see what they could do about these concerns. So it seems explicit in what Wagner told the Globe and Mail that they were in fact responding to social media hype about this. What seems to be missing in a lot of the reporting on this is that even in the interveners that were allowed in, the majority initially were against Trinity Western.
Sycamore says the decision is concerning because it appears the court bowed to political pressure. But he says there are two ways to look at this.
In one way, this decision is disturbing. The indications that the court is responding to political pressure, social media pressure, it seems like that's the kind of thing that a court is designed to be insulated from. That's the point of the court being independent from political institutions and elected offices, is that it's more immune from those kinds of concerns. At the same time, should the court rule in favor of Trinity Western, that at least then those groups who oppose Trinity Western will have had a hearing. And they won't be able to say, you favored Trinity Western without even having heard the groups most concerned about approving that school. And so in the event that Trinity Western wins, it will be seen as a better process and more satisfying for different groups involved.
The case will be heard over 2 days at the end of November. It's been almost 2 years since Health Canada approved the use of RU486, the so-called morning after pill, but that pill is still not universally available across the country. We need a law director. Mike Schutten says some provinces are struggling with some of the practical realities of introducing that drug into their healthcare systems.
The provinces are grappling with the whole rural aspect because there are stipulations on RU486. A woman needs an ultrasound prior to receiving this abortion drug. And afterwards, there are often complications that will require the DNC or further ultrasound just to ensure that all fetal parts have been removed from the woman. So they're grappling with what to do. Do we make this available in rural communities and risk disaster coming upon one or more women?
Some provinces, including Ontario, have announced full funding for the provision of the drug. However, Schutten says we should be keeping an eye on one particular province to see what they do with this issue.
The province of Saskatchewan is the most pro-life province in Canada, and they recently put forward a budget that had a lot of cuts in it, including to the healthcare field. And now if they're going to fund RE486, that's not going to play very well with their base, and it's not going to sit very well with fiscal conservatives in that province. I think they're going to face some pushback, not only now if they would indicate funding, but also at the polls in the next provincial election.
No word on when a decision will be made on this question. ARPA's Bibles Project is more than halfway to its funding goal. Executive Director Mark Penninga says the organization is committed to seeing this through for several very good reasons.
Beneath the political and legal battles of this day, There's the age-old spiritual battle. It's what Ephesians says about our struggle being against not the flesh and blood, but the rulers and authorities and the powers of this dark world. And although the vast majority of ARPA's efforts involve trying to communicate biblical truth in a way that's intelligible to a secular audience, there's also a time to share God's word directly with our leaders, to publicly acknowledge that spiritual battle that's being waged behind every political decision. And when we combine that reasoning with the reality that this is Canada's birthday, 150 years, and it's the 500th year of the Reformation, then we said this is a great time to give a quality Bible to every single member of Parliament and Senator, MPP, MLA, MNA, and even now we're adding on the Supreme Court judges.
As for funding, Penninga says the project is going well.
So far, we've received donations from 80 individuals and families. We've covered over half of the total cost. The total cost is going to be about $20,000. That includes the taxes and the shipping and the packaging and everything. We're at over 11,000, and that's with fairly little notice going out about this campaign so far.
More than half of the money raised so far has come from northern BC. Penning is hoping some other ARPA chapters take up the challenge to finish the fundraising. The plan is to distribute about 1,200 Bibles, including a number of them in French, by the end of October. Back with more after this.
Across Canada, laws continue to be introduced, limiting how parents can educate, discipline, and raise their children. This fall, the Supreme Court will decide whether they have the authority to overturn church discipline decisions. As Christians, how should we respond? Join us this fall from September 25th to October 20th as we speak on the question, who is sovereign? We'll be in BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario. Visit arpacanada.ca for details.
Late last month, Statistics Canada released a new batch of family data from the 2016 census. The new information talks about rates of marriage, divorce, cohabitation, lots of other stuff. Cardis Families Director Andrea Morozik has spent some time looking at the numbers, and she's here this week to talk to us about those stats. First of all, Andrea, welcome to Lighthouse News.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Off the top, I'd like to take kind of a 10,000-foot view of the numbers. More people are living alone. More than 28% of families are single-person units. That's the highest rate ever. Also, fewer people are getting married. More are opting to just live together rather than get married. We'll get into the specifics, but first, just kind of the overall trends. What are they telling us about demographics and society in general?
Right. So demographics is the word that I was going to bring up. We have changing demographics, which is certainly one aspect of these statistics. We have an aging society. We know that in Canada today, we have more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 15. As people age, they're more likely to be living alone. But then you partner that with the decline in marriage rates, and you basically have sort of an increased social isolation where people are living alone both at the start of life and at the end of life. Some claims in the data were that there's a higher divorce rate also, and certainly that would be a negative feature leading to living alone. But I'm not convinced there is a higher divorce rate simply because we're not getting married anymore. The reality of the data is we don't know what the divorce rate is because Statistics Canada doesn't measure it anymore. So from 10,000 feet, I would say that the biggest concern I have around the data is an increase in social isolation, and that's something for all of us to be aware of.
Cardis has written a 20-page report analyzing all this. The focus is on the decline in the marriage rates and the increase in cohabitation, some of the effects that those factors have on societal stability. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I'd also like your take on the single-person family thing. 28% is the highest proportion ever of people choosing to live alone. Combine that with another stat I saw that's not really addressed in your report, that more and more young people are continuing to live at home much longer than they used to. You know, there's the stereotype of the 28-year-old still living in their parents' basement. Mm-hmm. It seems to be taking hold.
Right. Well, you used the word choose to live alone. I'm not convinced that this is people's first choice in any event. Most of the statistics we have from surveys and polling suggest that young people do want to get married, and I don't think any of us aspire to live alone. With the young people living alone or the phenomenon of remaining in your parents' basement, we certainly have increased likelihood of that, and I think there's a cost factor there. But I also think that we have lost what sociologists might call a life script. And that script used to be quite clear, that you would finish high school, you'd get married, you'd have children. People knew how to get from youthful adolescence into what was considered adult life, your own life. And today we no longer have that life script, in part due to the decline of a marriage culture. So people don't know how to get where they're desiring to go. There's also the finances involved, for sure. Real estate prices are high across the country, in urban areas in particular. So a number of different factors there.
Now to the core of the report, the analysis of marriage versus common law relationships. In the first place, there's a problem with actually ferreting out some of that data. StatsCan has changed the goalposts on this. Explain that one for me.
Yeah, and I think that's a bigger story than people realize. So basically, in the past, Statistics Canada would have isolated cohabitation from marriage. We would have known precisely what percent of families are married versus living together versus lone parent families. For this census, they changed that. They obscured the cohabiting data. So what we get in this census is only what they call, quote unquote, intact families. So biological or adopting parents who remain together. But it doesn't matter to StatCan whether you are married or not. They only look at whether you're an intact family, and then you can get the lone parenting statistics. But we are going to be making a special request for the cohabiting data, which is very important for reasons I'm sure we'll get into.
In spite of those statistical difficulties, the data does show a trend toward lower marriage rates. You did manage to sort of ferret that out, along with an increase in the common law relationship thing. It may seem self-evident, but explain again why this distinction is important and why it's a bad thing for society in general.
The distinction is very important. It's because marriage and common law are not the same things, and everybody engaging in the different relationship forms knows they're not the same thing. Common law relationships are less stable. We know we have a divorce rate associated with marriage. In spite of that divorce rate, common law relationships are still less stable, more likely to fall apart. A child raised by common law parents or parents who are simply living together is more likely to see the dissolution of his or her parents' relationship. And that is a problem because it results in different social statistics for that child. For example, an increased likelihood of not staying in school, of dropping out of school, of doing drugs, earlier sexual initiation. Some of the social problems we see are related, correlated, not caused by, but correlated with family breakdown. So from our perspective, it's important to measure those things and keep them separate. Incidentally, in an ironic moment in the Statistics Canada release of the Census 2016 data, they do refer to a higher likelihood in Quebec of children seeing their parents' dissolution of relationship. And they actually go so far as to say that may be because Quebec has such high rates of cohabitation. So they allude to it in the report. They just don't give us the hard data. But it's important for Canadians to know those two types of relationships are, they're not the same thing.
Your report makes four recommendations. Can you briefly outline them for us, and also how you hope to have the government address them? Are you going to a cabinet minister with this, or what's the plan?
So on the recommendations, we basically are asking for revival of marriage as a social and cultural institution. We really want Canadians to be able to embrace stable married life and understand that this is the best way to raise children. When it comes to how we aim to achieve this, I think a very early starting point for Curtis family will be to ask for clearer statistics to be presented to Canadians. I mentioned early in the interview that we have stopped collecting the divorce rate at the federal level. The same is true of collecting just a crude marriage rate at the federal level. We no longer have access to those statistics. We stopped collecting them in 2011, which is why the last data point for crude marriage rates in the report is 2008. That's almost 10 years ago, and it is a real loss for so many reasons. For researchers, for cultural indicators, it's a loss to not have that data. So I think we have to, as researchers, start by asking for the correct data to be able to assess it. And then from there, we can provide good information, continue to provide information about the cultural and social ramifications of marriage. It's not just a private institution. It extends into our economy and our culture and is most important for raising of children, something that Canadians need to be made more aware of. So as a research institution, that's what we aim to do. Certainly, we would start by asking for the correct data points to be presented.
Andrew, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.